Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 128 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Straight from the Brimby's Mouth, about my conversation with Peter and Nikki Thompson, farmers who live 50 miles outside of Roma, a town of 7,000 souls located 320 miles east of Brisbane in the state of Queensland on the east coast of Australia. That's right, down under! A Brimby, by the way, B-R-U-M-B-Y, is the name Australians give feral horses. Get it? Straight from the Brimby's mouth! I interviewed Peter and Nikki during Spokane Ag Expo last February. They were taking a holiday that included stops to talk about the tillage point Thompson invented, called, appropriately enough, the Peter Point. There's a cool slow-motion video of the point in action at the Facebook page Peter Point, one word. I sat down with the Thompsons on February 6, 2019, in the corner of a large hall that had just hosted a presentation by WSU economist Randy Fortenberry. As you'll hear ahead, Thompson's father began buying the land he farms today 70 years ago. As you'll also hear, the 26-inch average annual rainfall the region receives is reliably unreliable. As I listened back to my interview with the Thompsons several months after I conducted it, I was again fascinated by his farming practices, which are almost as fickle as the weather, but in a smart way. Nikki Thompson, Peter's wife, is a life coach who can work out of her home thanks to a high-speed internet connection. Disgruntled about your job and the direction of your life? 10 years ago, Nikki was too, and did something about it, as you'll hear ahead. While Thompson's cropping practices are similar to summer fallow practices in the Northwest, there are differences. For instance, the only fertilizer he uses is about 10 pounds an acre of monoammonium phosphate, or MAP, as a starter. His nitrogen, he explained, comes from legume crop rotations, livestock, and lightning during rainstorms. That's right, in a thunderstorm there is enough electrical energy to separate the nitrogen atoms in the air. Once the atoms are separated, they fall to earth with rainwater and combine with minerals in the soil to form nitrates. Voila! Fertilizer! The Thompsons were hosted by a number of farmers as they traveled, often by train across the U.S., gathering information about farming practices, timing decisions, rotations, and tillage philosophy. I was fascinated as Peter Thompson described his own farm, and you will be too. I'm sure you'll understand from the context, but a paddock in Australia is what we would refer to as a field. Because Australia is in the southern hemisphere, the timing of its climate, which is determined by the tilt of the earth toward the sun, is opposite of the northern hemisphere. As you'll hear, an important date for Australian wheat farmers is Christmas, and not because of the holiday. I opened our conversation by asking Peter Thompson about conditions on his farm, which he did his best to convert from the metric system to something we Americans would understand.
So we're at 26-inch rainfall, summer dominant, and of course our summer's the opposite time of the year to yours. We live 50 miles from the closest town. We've got 18,000 acres.
18,000 acres?
Yep. Yep.
Wow. Yep. How many people do you have on 18,000 acres?
So we've got two young couples that work with us. One of them is basically solely responsible for the livestock operation. So we're beef cattle, grass-fed beef cattle. Everyone asks, what do you run? We're predominantly Santa Gertrudis cross, so Santa Gertrudis, Angus, Hereford cross cattle. And we crop about 2,500 acres, has been up to nearly 5,000, and it depends on seasonal conditions, markets and whatever, and the cropping will be wheat, chickpeas, mung beans and forage crops.
So primarily you would say you're a cattleman?
I grew up a cattleman with an absolute passion for farming and machinery, and so our country was all scrub country when my father went there 70 years ago this year. And through my childhood, teenage years, we developed that country, and my absolute passion is farming and cropping and machinery. So I really like cattle, but I love farming.
Wonderful, wonderful. We love farming too. So 26 inches of precip per year, is that, I mean, that's like the Palouse down here in Washington. I mean, how is it in Australia with 26 inches?
So our rainfall is very erratic. It, as I said, it's summer dominant, but like this year just gone, we had 17 inches for the calendar year. The year prior to that was 13. Go back to, so we were very dry through the 2000, was referred to as a millennial drought in Australia. We had lots of years of only 10 to 12 inches, but that was broken with 3 years of way above average rainfall, and the wettest year was 64 inches. So rainfall, very extreme, very erratic, and generally comes in storm or fairly, like it's nothing for us to have a 2, 3, 4 inches in a in an event. It could be a single, within an hour or a couple of days, and then you could go 4 months without rain. So it's not at all predictable as far as, which you can imagine then trying to crop with that. We work on growing our crops when we have a full profile of stored moisture with the hope that we may get some in-crop rather than planting and expecting to get rain in-crop. So it's a very different operation to a lot of places where they, 26 inches may sound like a lot of rain, but if it doesn't fall in crop, you've got to have done a really good job with your fallowing.
Is there a fallow interval between all your crops?
Yeah, so can be long or short fallow. We predominantly grow, in our region, grow winter crops because even though we don't get any, our rain is, we'll get 20 of the 26 inches in a normal year between harvest and planting, and 6 inches in the growing season, actually six within post-planting, pre-ripening, would be phenomenal. Often you'll get 2 inches in the growing season and 4 inches in the harvest week, so when it's too late, obviously. So, there's a lot of managing very variable and unpredictable weather situation.
What do you do when 4 inches falls in 24 hours?
You get very wet very quickly. it's really critical for us in our farming cropping country to have good erosion control measures in place, so good ground cover. And over the years, spending thousands and thousands of hours on tractors, I've looked back at tines going through the soil and have come up with a farming system that is really looking at what nature does in these what could be seen as extreme events. And the really critical thing for us is getting as much of that moisture into the ground when you're having these extreme events, but when it gets to all soils will get to a point where they just can't take it in. So it's getting it safely off the paddock. And my catch cry is keeping the paddock in the paddock, so making sure you minimise soil erosion. And that comes about through the actual layout of how you physically farm a paddock. And so
now you've developed a new tillage point, is that correct?
Yes, so it's it's actually about 25 years ago.
New to us?
Yep. I was seeing that we were getting the planting, our normal wheat planting rain is in May, so our winter cereal and winter pulse planting time is May, and we were continually seeing less and less planting rains arriving on time. And because we have a very short growing season, so we plant May, have to dodge frost in August and harvest in late September, early October. So it's a very tight window.
So that would be, in our country, that would be a spring rotation.
Yeah. I've been trying to get my head fully around exactly what you're doing here. So, very similar. But what I was seeing was this, we had all this soil moisture, but it was at depth. And an ideal planting depth is 1.5, 2 inches deep. And we're finding, come ideal planting time in May, that there was the moisture may be down 6 inches below the surface. And so that's where I, once again, after thousands of hours of watching things going through the soil, came up with this idea of we've used moisture-seeking techniques in Australia before, but it was generally in summer crops, and it was generally very slow, bulldozing the dry soil out of the way. And what I've come up with is and we've named it the Peter Point, and it's...
The Peter Point?
Yep.
After you.
And it's... the simple description is, for anyone who knows what an F-111 fighter plane looks like, so sharp point, wings swept back, that's what, you know, this spears through the ground, and the shape of the wings and where they start on the point and the shape of the nose of the point are all critical to the flow of the soil. And what we can do is plant an inch deep, or we've been up to 8 inches deep, and still only have a maximum of 2 inches of soil back over the seed. So you can plant 8 inches deep, but you get the seed out of the ground. And, of course, we run into the issue with the warm ground coming out of our hot summers. So we were talking before, the 110, 115, 100-degree summers with nights that I've got to convert it, we're 24 degrees minimums at night, so obviously the ground really 24 Celsius.
Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Celsius. I'm just trying to think what 20, 24 is in... it's probably about 80. Yeah, it could be nearly 80. So our ground is very hot at planting time. Mm-hmm. The hotter the ground, the shorter the... Even with a longest bred coleoptile, the coleoptile shortens up. So our plant breeders have been looking at ways of trying to increase the coleoptile length, and me being someone who likes playing in the dirt, went the other way and looked at how do we, you know, create a environment for the seed to come up. So effectively we've got, depending how deep we're planting, we could be on anything from 9-inch row spacing out to 18-inch.
So tell me about the passes that you have on your land. So here it is. It's May, right?
Yep.
You're going to get into the field and you're going to plant. So
yep.
What have you done prior to planting?
Yep. So I'll go back to harvest. So obviously harvest, and then once again, depending on the season, if we've had a wet harvest, we will go in and chisel plough to tear out the damage from the harvesters, etc. But most, if there was ever such a thing as a normal year, would generally be a herbicide spray first. But we, over the years, so we've played around with zero till, and I still firmly believe there's a need for steel in the system somewhere through the season in order to get on top of weed issues. So given our rainfall summertime, Our biggest expense is the controlling weeds in the fallow. And given the amount of resistance, herbicide resistance we're getting in weeds now, I mean, you cannot beat cold, hard steel.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because certainly we're having a lot of resistance issues. You guys had the Roundup resistance long before we had it here in the States.
Yep.
Tell me how you are fighting those resistance issues.
So a few things, and just to give an eye, I'm not sure what rates, and unfortunately I'll have to speak this metric.
Yeah, that's fine.
But so we used to use Roundup at about 500 mils, maybe 800 mils per hectare of the old original 360 grams per litre active. Currently we use a 540 gram per litre active, and generally going on at 2 litres. It's many multiples of what we used to, and still not killing everything. So for us, there'll be rotation, so we may go into a summer crop. But the bigger thing for our cereal cropping is literally using steel. So on that side of it, for many years we were using the standard, we refer to them as tin or steel sweeps. I got really frustrated seeing how much material, when a sweep's worn out, there's still about 70% of the steel there. And you know, not wanting to see resources wasted, I've actually come up with we've got the Peter Point, which is the planting point, and there's several versions of that, but have developed a sweep that's called a Cultimate, which is based around the Peter Point design with wings attached to it. And it's the Peter Point design being really sharp and penetrates the ground really easily. The centre part basically lasts for a really long time, and you only replace the wing bit of it. So I see that's going to play a big role in... used to refer to it as strategic tillage in Australia for all the zero tillers that just were never going to put steel back in the ground. Interestingly, nowadays they talk about rotational. You know, it's gaining... we're going back to some of the old ways without going back to the ploughing the field every second day and creating dust bowls, etc.
Right, right. Was there a point where Roundup was more efficient in killing the weeds and that you could get away from using all of those passes over the field?
Yeah, definitely in the early... And one of the things that frightens me these days is people are now going back to paraquat, which is... I actually personally refuse to use it. We do all of our own spraying, but we'd get contractors in from time to time, and we've used paraquat twice in the last 3 years, and we've had a contractor who's had all the super good protective, as in carbon-filtered cabs and all. But if we get to the point of needing to use paraquat all the time, the whole system's totally fallen down.
Yes, yes, and it's not like you want to use something with a skull and crossbones on it. Have you gotten into any of the difficulties with what we refer to as late maturity alpha amylase, which is a falling number discount? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, so only if we get a wet harvest. And interestingly, I was talking to one of the local farmers here before, and he's asking what sort of wheat we grew. So our wheat is a high-protein bread-making wheat, which for the last 20 years now has been fed to animals, sold to the feedlot industry.
Is that an Australian prime hard?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So 13%, 14%, 15% prime hard wheat, just because the market is about $50 a ton better to feed into the animal feed industry than humans.
Wow. Yeah,
which is frustrating. It's frustrating for me as a farmer, and it's frustrating for Nick and I with our whole ethos of we've got grass-fed, our own beef is grass-fed beef. We'd really like to think that the products that we've got that are coming from the land suited to that go to their best purpose, but the economic reality is you can't walk away from $50 a ton if you want to still be able to be operating.
Yes. Yeah. And so we've been hearing about drought in Australia here the last year or so. Yeah. I mean, are you in the midst of a drought? How has it affected your farm?
So we're the areas you will have been really hearing about is through where we are in Queensland, we're the northern grain belt of the East Coast. New South Wales and Victoria are the main grain belt of the East Coast of Australia, and they've been in really... They've gone literally in about an 18-month period from good seasons to just literally the tap turned off, and a lot of people are really struggling. I describe where we farm as somewhere that is reliably unreliable. So, and we are dry right the moment. When we left home, we've had the driest ever. January is our wettest month, and we had no rain at all. And we're nearly halfway through February, and still hasn't rained. I describe it as being a dry country that gets interspersed with rain. So we need to be able to farm in a manner that can handle opportunity when it arises rather than expecting the good opportunity every year, which is, you know, with our whole cropping sequence and cropping technique, it's about being ready to take advantage of when the moisture's there. We have a desire to be growing winter crops, but we also grow mung beans and forage sorghum in the summertime when those opportunities are there, and also when it fits into the, you know, the rotation, the paddock rotation.
So did you say that you lived 70 miles from the nearest town?
50 miles from the nearest town.
50 yeah. miles from the nearest town. So I'm curious, what's your internet like?
It's quite amazing. So one of the things I haven't mentioned, we're in the middle of an area where there's been massive coal seam gas development. So over here, I think you call it coal bed methane. And due to that, there's been a lot of infrastructure go into our area. So we've got, for those that know the tech side of it, we have 4GX technology, mobile technology, and we have handheld high-speed internet anywhere around the farm, which is, that's not usual for Australia, but it's wonderful.
It's certainly not usual here. So, Nikki, you have a profession as well. What is it?
For the last 10 years, I've been working as a life coach and working with businesses around change management. And before that, for about 30 years, I worked as a physiotherapist, so a physical therapist, and used to travel in and out of town 3 days a week on some fairly interesting roads back in those days.
I bet. And so now, are you mostly based on the farm, and do you do this remotely?
I do a lot of things remotely, and I've got a little house that I rent in town with another friend and have an office space set up there, so work a couple of days a week in town and then the rest of it's remotely. I've done a lot of study remotely that was based in the US, which has just been, you know, I pinched myself for a lot of years as I'd sit, particularly when the internet wasn't so good. And I'd be, you know, learning through. I did a neuro leadership postgraduate, and that was quite amazing to think I was sitting, you know, 50 miles out of town and connecting with people that it was one of the unis in LA. And so and I love the fact that there's those opportunities now to, you know, live local and work global.
So who comes to you? You know, somebody like myself, for instance, who says, I'm not fulfilled by my job or something like that?
Yeah, I get people who are sort of in that change point, and which is probably something I was aware of going through myself, that I had an intentional midlife crisis. When I turned 40, I consciously took a year off because I could just feel what I was doing wasn't quite feeding my soul. And I did a lot of reading and looked at, so from the health professional aspect, I was looking at alternative health and different things like that. And so once I got in the coaching game, I understand that, and I have a real passion that with the way we're changing globally, that we need to be looking at different ways of working.
And of course, that's much easier with high-speed internet access, which a lot of our rural communities don't have, and which really upsets me.
Yeah.
So is that how you're basically talking to these people?
I think there's a whole lot of untapped potential in women globally. And women, I think, innately, and I'm not wanting to offend any men, I'm sitting surrounded by three at the moment. Women, I think, just innately do collaborate, whereas men, I think, and society has had much more with judging success by who gets to the top, whereas I think women have worked better together, and men are starting to learn from that, I think. So I think there's a lot of ways for women to work from different places geographically and bring different passions together. And there's a wonderful woman back in Australia called Rebel Black who's set up an organisation called The Rural Woman. And that's all been done online, and it's around helping. She has a beautiful byline around bloom where you're planted. So helping women all over find ways to connect with each other. So somebody might be passionate about marketing and they can help somebody else market their small business. And you know, it can be bartering, it can be done in all sorts of different ways.
Did you hear Nikki Thompson say, bloom where you're planted? It's a terrific sentiment, and I endorse it heartily. but it's so much easier to do in places with a high-speed internet connection. I still think the revitalization of rural areas depends on people having the same internet access that can be found in cities. Younger people will trade income for quality of life, but that's got to include streaming movies. I was fascinated by Thompson's description of his farming system, which sounded like he makes a lot more of his decisions on the fly, depending on the weather, than we do in the Northwest. Given that climatologists suggest Northwest weather will be more variable in the future, particularly in the spring, I wonder if Thompson's approach will find an audience here. I hope you enjoyed episode 128, or what I entitled, Straight from the Brumby's Mouth. A title better understood when told that a Brumby is the name for an Australian feral horse. Please like us at the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page, then join me here again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. In times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.